Hey everyone, welcome to the 25th episode of the Fan to Fan Podcast, brought to you by Pro Wrestling Ponderings and syndicated over on the Russell Folks Podcast Network. Be sure to follow both groups on Twitter at PW Ponderings and at Russell Folks. Subscribe to both on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Leave 5-star reviews, comments, and whatnot, because the more people that see it, the more people listen to it, and that's just good news all around. My guest this week, Billy Kumahara from Chikara Pro. He hosts the Quiz Battle Crisis Showdown deal that they would do before the shows. You may have seen it on some DVDs. And I do want to give a couple disclaimers here before we get into things. First and foremost, I know a lot of people are probably coming on this to expect a lot of dirt and scoops about Chikara, because that just came back at National Pro Wrestling Day. And believe me, I'm beyond thrilled about it. Big fan. Was there in attendance, saw everything go down, was really happy with it. And while Billy and I definitely talk about Chikara a little bit, it's not taking up the majority of the interview. So if you're someone coming on here expecting an hour plus of just Chikara talk, I apologize. That's not what this podcast is about. I did not throw the format out the window. I've actually wanted to have Billy on for a very long time and talk about his fandom and all that and how he got to the point where he's in Chikara. And that's exactly what we did. But the second disclaimer I want to throw in here is that both Billy and I graduated from the same college, so we get into a little bit of talk. Well, maybe a lot of talk about just random college stories we had that have nothing to do with wrestling. Some of them actually do have to do with wrestling, but I apologize if that does not interest you, if that is not what you came to listen to, but I had a fun time listening to his stories, and I think the same could be said from his side of the table, so I left him in there for your listening enjoyment, because that's what I like listening to about podcasts. And sorry again, this was published late. I gotta stop having guests that can only record on Thursdays on here, but I promise I'm going to try to get back on track very soon. But we're just kind of an intro this week because of it, so I've already plugged the Twitters and the iTunes and stuff for Pro Wrestling Ponderings and Russell Folks. Let's get into the other plugs. Follow me on Twitter at kford13. Talk about wrestling and comics and whatever else I feel like talking about. If you are a Chikara fan, listen to this. I highly recommend following at Chikara Special on Twitter and on Tumblr as well if you're on there. Both are run by me because I'm a big Chikara fan, and I like putting all the stuff that's out there officially and unofficially into one place. So no need to go around collecting things on your own. Just follow both of those and you're going to be A-okay. There's great other radio shows, both for Pro Wrestling Ponderings and Russell Folks, that you can listen to. Every week on PW Ponderings, Chris GST and Des Delgadillo produce the weekly newscast. All the news and stuff that has gone on in the world of independent professional wrestling they discuss. And Kevin Harvey produces Schools In, where he and another wrestling personality sit down and talk about whatever they feel like. Over on the Russell Folks Podcast Network, Tom Green does his show, Russell Folks, where usually he sits down with a comedian or other sort of funny person or friend to talk about professional wrestling. But this week is actually a very special episode. If you are a fan of Chikara, even if you're not, I very, very highly recommend listening to this week's episode with Leonard F. Chikarason, where they get nitty-gritty about all the Chikara stuff that went down in a very honest and open look. I highly recommend it again. One of my favorite podcasts Tom has ever done. One of my favorite podcasts Leonard F. Chikarason's ever done. I really recommend listening to it. Also recommend listening to the Reed Bentley and Nick Manawa Variety Show. Reed Bentley, I think, actually is going to be the guest for Fan to Fan next week, at least as it stands now, because this weekend he gets to face his hero, Chris Hero, in fact, an idol of his in the world of professional wrestling, for IW Mid-South, and I'm very interested to hear about all of that. But this week, they give his thoughts before the match and talk about National Pro Wrestling Day as well. And I love Reed Barbecue Bentley, so, and Nick Manawa. I just want to say Reed Barbecue Bentley, but I felt bad not including Nick Manawa on there, so I'm going to do that. And I think that's just about everything. Oh, another podcast from Pro Wrestling Ponderings. If you're a fan of the show Adventure Time, myself, Brad Gruen, and Justin Houston do an Adventure Time podcast now. It's called Flooping the Pig, and it airs on Mondays on pwponderings.com, but it publishes early on iTunes on a Sunday nights. So now that is for real the plugs I have. Let's get into mine and Billy Kumahara's chat about everything. All right, I'm here now with Billy Kumahara of Chikara Pro, and I'm sure a lot of people are here to hear about all the Chikara goings on, but we're going to get to that a lot later. We're not going to break format. So, Billy, how's it going, man?
Good, Kevin. How you been?
I've been great. I'm happy Chikara's back. National Pro Wrestling Day was fun, but like I said, we're going to get to that later. I've actually wanted to have you on the show for a long time, even before all this stuff kind of was going down and all the Ash videos airing, I had a list of people who I wanted to have talk on. And, you know, I'd heard your Breakfast with Jakara podcast, and I thought that was really interesting. And we both come from the same school, so I definitely wanted to come on and talk about wrestling and stuff. So how did you get into pro wrestling?
I've always been a fan. You know, as a little kid, I think the first I had to have been in first grade or so when it just came on after my cartoons. And I remember I played soccer, and I was on, like, a swim team or something like that when I was a little kid. And I remember not wanting to go or just coming up with excuses to not have to go because I just wanted to watch whatever the heck it was on TV. I can't remember the exact, you know, WWF name of it. Like, it definitely wasn't – maybe it was Superstars back then, but this was, like, 1980.
Could have been, like, Wrestling Challenge or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe it was Wrestling Challenge. So that's and then I had one of my cousins who's the same age as I am. Like, whenever we would go to his house, that's all we – you know, he kind of exposed me to everything, and that's – kind of how it grew from there. You know, and growing up in Philadelphia also, you just a big chunk of my high school years was just going down to the ECW arena too. So
I know it's funny you bring up soccer. I have a very specific memory when I'm like 5 or 6 years old, and my mom's helping me take off all the cleats and the pads and stuff. It's a big production when you're a kid, right? And my dad calls from downstairs, Superstars on. He's like, hurry up, you're missing Coco Beware versus The Undertaker. And I was like, Mom, did you hear that? I have to go watch Coco Beware and The Undertaker.
And then it was over before he even got the first clean off.
I think you're 100% right. I think I was like, oh, yeah, he lost to the Tombstone. I was like, God damn it. And this was like high-energy jobber Coco Beware, like nearly at the end of his WWF run. But, you know, I didn't know any better.
To him, I loved him, but was there really any other version of him? So.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I feel like maybe he was more prolific before High Energy. I just kind of have that feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
He did have the Pile Driver song.
Yeah, he did. Wow, I totally forgot about that. He was, he was the lead vocals on that. And wasn't he? He was on the cover too, if I remember right.
The CD had Hogan on the cover.
Oh, okay. I'm totally wrong. Well,
VHS did, but I mean, like, he was, you know, he was a pretty big focus of the music video. I mean, how could you forget that song if you've seen the music video?
It's Girls in Cars actually is my personal fave.
Oh yeah, Girls in Cars is great.
Had nothing to do with the tag team that used that. You know, like they there was no connection at all between that song, the video for that song, or the tag team that it was associated with at all. You know, it was just three disparate elements. So.
And I think I mentioned this on another episode of the podcast, but that song actually like in MIDI form was used as Ted DiBiase's theme on the WrestleMania NES game. So one of my friends actually pointed out to me, because I had no idea, and he was like, yeah, like, I was a kid and I recognized it right away, but I also didn't know why, because DiBiase didn't have music for the longest time.
That just blew my mind, man. I had that game too. I remember he had, like, the iPoke. I think he was one of the few guys that had the iPoke, but I'd never even realized that was his music.
Yeah, go back and listen to it. It's sort of strange how that worked out, but... So I don't know why that song, like that game came out before that CD.
Yeah.
So I would like to know the origin story of Girls in Cars now that I'm thinking about it.
Just who thought that was, which producer thought that would be a great idea? Yeah, I mean, that kind of seemed like it was one of those deals where, hey, we have this song and we'll let you record this album, but you got to cram this song into here. You know, it was just, was it Rick Derringer? Is that who did that? I don't know.
Robbie Dupree did Girls.
Robbie Dupree. I was way off. It won't start with an R. So.
Well, the great thing is, it's like, Pile Driver had a good, like starting off, it had, like, Girls in Cars, Pile Driver, the Honky Tonk Man's theme, yep. Demolition's theme, and then Jive Soul Brawl all back to back.
Yeah.
So, you don't get CDs with five great songs in a row anymore.
I mean, that's like my, like, a playlist. That's just like a normal playlist for me on a regular day. So.
Have you ever, since you're a big wrestling fan, do you ever go to, like, parties or plays in public and just end up, like, throwing a wrestling song onto a playlist and seeing if people
absolutely, know? Absolutely. It's and I worked as I was a house music DJ in Philadelphia, New York. Actually, a couple of different cities, but I would always try to sneak something in, like, all the time. And maybe at the end of the night, or if I was doing my sound check or something like that, and just to see who would kind of catch it. I mean, Real American was a really easy, you know, I'm a Real American, is a real easy one to do, but who was oh my gosh, you know what, I could probably even at the risk of losing the fidelity of our Skype chat here, I might even be able to pull up like an old Serato playlist where I've done that just to mess with people. So, I mean,
did you see any out there reactions, like people just like kind of stopping in their tracks being like, what is this?
I remember having a it was a really bad quality. I ripped the, I guess, rip of the Blue Meanies theme song from WrestleMania 2000. Was it in 2000 or No Mercy?
2000.
Okay, yeah, so it was from 2000. And I remember just like playing that for about 15 seconds, and people just, I think it was less of like, oh, what is this playing versus what is this really poor quality MP3 that he's playing right?
Because that's like totally danceable music and would fit in on a list like that too. So you can probably get away with that.
That's something that I've always wanted to do. A couple of the guys have, because anybody who's been to the live Chikara shows over the last two seasons, if you get there early and I'm doing a sound check, it's usually a live DJ set that I'm playing, and I'm just messing around. I'm just playing songs that I really like, and one of my goals, maybe I'll try to do it next season, is just do a, you know, like a DJ AM girl talk type set of just wrestling songs. That's something that I've been wanting to do for a long, long time now. So
my jaw literally just dropped as you said that, because I love girl talk, and having it being just wrestling themes would be amazing. Because like looking at the track list that he does and the way he incorporates that songs is so meticulous. It's got to take forever.
Well,
so
I did something like that at How to Hatch a Dinosaur. I did that before the pay-per-view started, because I remember getting everybody to sing to like final. I mean, it was more. I played the final countdown. But it was like songs from Rocky, just a whole bunch of you know, movie montage songs and like fight songs and stuff like that. I did that there, and then and I think that's where that it might have been like J-Ro or Jolly Roger just said, hey, you should just do this with all wrestling songs. And then I kind of messed around with that when we were down in Tampa, Florida at Ybor City. I remember just trying to do that, because I was like, yeah, what the heck, you know, it's more like a party here, and that's kind of like the feeling that I like to that's the most I can add to the show, is just before it happens and after it happens, you know, it's a party. So.
Well, you did come from a party school.
Yeah, so that makes sense. For anybody, I don't know if you mentioned earlier, but Kevin and I both went to JMU. I don't think we were there at the same time. I think maybe you were starting one right when I was leaving.
Yeah, I'm class of 2010, and I finished in 4 years.
Oh, okay. So you were there way after I was. I'm really old then. So it's
sorry, dude.
the only legacy I left on that school is that I started a breakdancing team.
That's, I know, you told me that, and I was like, holy crap, because I knew people who went to the breakdancing club. and if I had known then, because obviously I didn't know you till years after I graduated, I could have been like, I know the guy who started this club.
Well, it wasn't just me by myself. It was myself and about
Well, that's a story I would have told.
One day I just couldn't, you know, I just had my boombox, and then my professor came out and was like, turn that music up. And started up rocking, and then everybody else in I don't even remember the names of the dining halls or anything like that. I'm sure the whole place looks completely different now. So
they've pretty much rebuilt on the other side of 81, and just,
oh wow,
it's crazy. Even when I go back, I don't recognize it, because like they built this nice like performance like arts hall, right like to like where the Buffalo Wild Wings is, to the right of that. It's completely different, man. But it's great.
I felt like the last homecoming I went to, I think, was when they had the IT or the computer, for, you know, like they were really pushing information technology by the end of my tenure there.
Okay.
And then I came back from homecoming, and for everybody who's not from the Mid-Atlantic United States, but you are from the Philadelphia area, JMU, the equivalent is like Penn State, I think. It's a big party school. When I went there, it was a lot of, I would say, just like athletic type people, you know, like they just rich kids from Northern Virginia.
And yeah. Then
when I came back there for homecoming, I felt like it was the opening to the second Revenge of the Nerds movie. No offense to people that like computers like myself. I work in IT, but, you know, I was like, I didn't recognize the campus, and then everything was like IT center, IT center, IT center. So it was like I don't, yeah. So.
Kids back in my day when I attended school.
There were bullies with tans and blonde hair wedging me no matter where I went at JMU.
Now, do you know how many toilets I've seen the inside of, son?
At JMU, probably as many as I have. Again, this is, for our listeners, this is very much a party school.
Mm-hmm. So. Did you ever hear the Playboy myth about JMU and the party school stuff?
Oh, yeah. The year that I started, actually, we got, like, are you talking about how we were, it was listed in Playboy magazine for best party school on the East Coast or something like that?
So the rumor I heard, which was dispelled by, I think it was my health professor who dispelled it, was Playboy apparently publishes this list of, like, the top party schools in the country, I think maybe annually.
Mm-hmm.
It may just be a feature they do when they have nothing else to publish.
Yeah.
But somebody said that JMU made it, like, number one a bunch, and then eventually 1 year it wasn't on the list, and they posted something like, we no longer put JMU on the list of party schools because we don't think it's appropriate to list a professional in a list of schools that are amateurs.
Oh, that's awesome.
And everyone believed that it. And then years later, they're like, nah, that never happened. And everyone was a little bummed out.
I'm bummed out now.
Yeah.
I think
it was just like maybe people felt like when they heard that, they had to perpetuate that stereotype and party even harder. And they were like, we really don't need that. Especially when there was a riot the year that I graduated.
I didn't hear about that one.
Did you not hear about that?
I did not hear about it. Where did it happen and why?
Okay, so like it happened on... Port Republic,
right?
Which, for those who don't know, if you're going on 81, like 81 south towards the school, get up on the exit, it's pretty much right there.
Yeah.
So this was the weekend of like the annual like spring block party.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually had gone out of town to like Luray to one of the zoos out there with friends like in the morning.
Okay.
So I'm driving back. I'm driving him past there, and there's just like hundreds of kids walking from campus up to the houses.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, this is mayhem. And I'm like, I want nothing to do with this. I have like 3 weeks to graduate. That's way too many people. I'm just not going to bother. So I just like, you know, went outside. It was a nice day. I was just hanging out. And at this time, I was also interning in the HR department at Rockingham Hospital, the hospital that's associated with the school.
Yep. Yep.
And later I'm hanging out, like I had some friends who came out of town and from UVA, and we're all hanging out, and one of them calls one of my friends to say he got tear gassed while he was there.
What the heck?
Like, so I guess there was like cops there to try to make sure everything was in order, because there's like a million people there just hanging out in roughhousing. Yeah. So, but I mean, like, these, they had like shields and tear gas and things like this. And
What kicked all of this off?
I wish I could remember exactly what kicked it off. I think it was just probably just drunk college kids just trying to start fights. Like, hey, man, you can't impeach on my right to drink outside in public even though I'm underage. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
But so the reason I bring up the hospital thing is I heard like just horror stories, because one of the people in the department helped volunteer for like the firefighter or something on weekends. And they said like one girl was so drunk she was running and like a beer bottle got thrown at her and broke on her back and she was bleeding and didn't notice. But the worst story of all was that a guy was climbing a fence and caught his testicles on the fence and had to be airlifted to UVA Hospital to be fixed. Because the first thing I got asked when I got there was like, you weren't there, were you? And I was like, no, I swear. I'm scared of you.
I've got 3 weeks left.
Yeah,
you're like the veteran cop in every cop movie cliche. Or just
that's
like,
right. Well, that
getting down 3 weeks.
But also at that point, I was just like, I am so over all of this. Like, this was fun as a freshman, but man, I'm just and knowing what I know now, boy, am I glad I did not go there. But you know, it's everyone tells me now that at the beginning of every school year, there's cops everywhere. It's a lot more strict and
really?
It's tougher to go out and do things. It's probably now that it's been a few years, it's sort of waned off. But like, you know, the president had to send an email to all the students. Like, I remember people like calling or texting me, like, dude, are you OK? And I was just like, man, this is a big deal. This is pretty crazy.
Dude, I feel really guilty about just I think it was my second semester. Just a buddy of mine who drove me down in his truck. I had to get down there before classes started. I think it was for seating auditions because I was a music major. I got down there like a week ahead of time and now I feel really guilty about my buddy Tommy and I just ripping through the quad and just busting donuts right in front of Wilson Hall.
Like just cause?
Yeah, there's no one else around. And he's like, oh, let's just do it.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
But now apparently it became under totalitarian military states since
it's I don't want to make it sound that bad, but you can understand like a couple of years after that, like the police had their guard up. Like you know, graduating in 4 years at that school, I find is an
achievement in and of itself.
Yeah. That's super. Well, I had most of my friends did the 5 year thing, so I would go down there and. People were saying they heard from them like, yeah, it's everyone's kind of on their toes for this. Just a couple seasons ago, I went down for a football game.
Right.
And my friend, a couple of my friends were in a fraternity down there, Delta Chi, and they moved houses to they used to live like kind of sort of in like the neighborhood that's around the hospital. But now they're just like right on Main Street.
OK.
And. So I'm tailgating with friends, and one of my buddies who was from the fraternity kind of walks over, and I'm like, hey, like, we weren't expecting to see you later because you're with your fraternity. He goes, yeah, a girl fell off the roof, so I decided to leave. And I was like, what? So now the story that we tell is that my friend pushed the girl off the roof, and then he had to leave.
That's an awful story to tell. If you're going to tell that story, I think you totally have to work everybody, because everyone gets really somber.
Because I can't think of another reason why he pushed it off the roof. Like, it's just too convenient that girl falls off roof and you bail. Like, that's the minute you decide to leave. Like, you didn't hang around to see if she was okay. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm sure other people were there to make sure she was tended to and all that. But your attitude is just, well, I'm out of here.
I feel like your experiences, JMU, were way crazier than mine now. It's the most I remember going to see a show off of Main Street at somebody's house where the band was just had a potato cannon and was firing like donuts and stuff at people. I mean, that's about it. So
that's pretty awesome. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I was one of those people who thought too logically when I would go out and do things. So I unfortunately don't have like crazy stories about me doing things like that. Like I could go on for days about like a friend who was so drunk he thought demons were possessing his cell phone, so he had to smash it, and a bunch of other crazy things. But That's pretty much a podcast in and of itself.
So Kevin and I are going to be starting a new podcast about JMU and how we're so glad our college experiences were bad enough to still be able to distance ourselves.
But I had friends who watched wrestling, and I actually got a couple of them into Chikara, but I did not feel like that was especially like in my time when it was way past the Attitude Era and things like that.
We'll bring this back in a loop here. So I would come up to Philadelphia whenever I could, and
I have to ask. So you were from Philadelphia and came to JMU from there.
Yes.
How on earth did you hear about that?
My oldest sister went to Virginia Wesleyan University, right? And I would go down and visit her, and then I think when I was just going through that whole process. You know, I was like, hey, you know, both of my sisters like live in the D.C. area. I might as well go see if there's any schools down there that I might want to check out. And I did. I looked at a lot of schools in Virginia. JMU was the only one dumb enough to actually give me money to go there. So there you go.
That explains it.
So that it really isn't. It's not. I never and this is the wrestling coming through here. It's not a far drive from Pennsylvania. Was that? Two and a half, 3 hours, maybe.
From Pennsylvania? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like I drove to the ECW Arena from Philly or from Harrisonburg, and it took at least 5 hours.
Oh yeah, for Harrisonburg?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like maybe the worst day of my life. Okay, worst day of my life was a little dramatic, but the worst drive I ever had to do was the first show I went to at the arena was Ring of Honor's Glory by Honor 7 show, which was in September of 2008.
I think I was at that show. Who was on that card? Because
The main event was the Steel Cage Warfare.
Yeah, was it
Age of the Fall, Briscoes, those guys?
Yeah. I think I have photos of that on my Flickr. I know I have a whole bunch of old Ring of Honor stuff. Right. 07, you're saying?
No, 08. That's like Danielson, Nakajima.
Yeah,
or not Nakajima. Oh yeah, it was Nakajima.
Okay, so if you're watching back then, maybe it was 08 or 09. When did Colt come back to Ring of Honor? Was it that same year?
You know, he came back in March of 09.
Okay. Because that following year, any astute Ring of Honor HD Net slash real TV fans out there, you'll see me with a cast on, hobbling around on crutches, and I was in a bunch of backstage vignettes, dealing with Colt coming back to, like, the surprise person coming back to Ring of Honor. So,
in what way were you tied into that?
I was at a couple shows, and I was on legitimately on crutches for twisting my ankle from roller skating, and
tough.
One of the producers came up to me, and I was outside. I may have actually told the story before on another thing, but I was outside with my lady friend, and one of the producers just said, "Is that a real cast?" I said, "Yeah." And then he said, "Do you guys want to be on TV?" Said, "Yeah." And then they just had us go with their camera crew. Said, "Okay, stand by here and pretend like you're trying to sneak in. Now stand by here and pretend like you're trying to sneak in here. Now stand by here, and I want you to run into to my friend. Like, you to run in that locker room. There's a jacket in that bag. Grab it and run out." And then that's when they turned to me, and it was what's the main security guy's name? Big dude. I can't remember his name.
I don't either.
Ring of Honor's main security guy at the time just walked right up to me, and he's like, go limp. He's like, is your ankle really messed up? I said, yeah. And then he's like, okay, I'm going to make sure you don't land on it. And just like threw me like a tight spiral, like a Nerf football into a pile of ring ropes and stuff on camera. And that ended up being on. I know people saw some of those vignettes on the HD net, because I got letters from a lot of my former students about it. And then also on some reality show about bouncers. So,
I'm confused. Why did they take these vignettes again? I don't remember seeing any of them.
It was supposed to be for Colt coming back, or Colt reappearing in Ring of Honor.
But why does you, a crippled person, trying to sneak into the arena, tie into Colt Cabana coming back?
It was supposed to be about, you know, a big star coming back, and we were just trying to get his autograph.
Makes sense.
And I remember them telling, they told my friend, "Hey, he's going to have a jacket in a bag. Go grab it and run out." And instead, somebody put his singlet in there that he had just wore. So when she grabbed it and ran, it was her legit reaction of, "What is this soggy thing I'm holding it?" And she was just running out the building.
Oh, so. I'm shuddering just thinking about that. That's got to be gross.
Yeah. So, I think one or two people have actually come up to me in shows in the past and be like, "I think I saw you. I remember seeing you there." So
I drove to that show. And this Ring of Honor shows were still going forever, so the show didn't end until 12:30 p.m.
Yeah, those tapings were marathons, but.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm in college. I do not have a lot of money, so we didn't get a hotel for the night. Didn't really know anybody in Philly, so we drove back. By about hour and a half outside of Harrisonburg, I was basically hallucinating. I was so tired. And just, like, probably going, like, 90 in what was then, like, a 65. Yeah. But thankfully, there's no one else on the road, probably no cops out, and we make it home at like 6, and I just pass out of bed. I was like, that is the worst experience I've ever dealt with, and never will I do something like that again.
Oh my gosh. But at least there was wrestling. I mean, when I was down there, I would come back up to Philly maybe once a month, and then Rock and Roll Express was still around on South Street. If you ever watch any of the old ECW TV tapes, they always talk about how tickets were available at Rock and Roll Express, but I would go and I would buy tapes there. Or I would just talk to my friends who were still living in the area, and they would tape the TV 48 ECW shows, and then that, like, Hardcore TV or what have you. And I would bring them down, and I can't remember if it was when I was in Eagle and Bell Hall. They're just tying all these together. Eagle and Bell Hall were right next to each other, right? JMU, do you remember that?
Eagle was one of the awful non-air conditioned super tall ones by the business school. Bell was on. Bell, when I went there, it was like the substance-free dorms.
Yes. Okay. So that. Okay.
And that was on a different part of campus.
Yep. Okay. So this was when I was rooming in Bell Hall, all you had to say was that, and for other reasons that I don't want to tarnish my family friendly. just kidding. But yeah, because it was Bell Hall. It was when I was in Bell Hall. So that was probably my first semester there. I would just in the common room. They had a VCR, and I would just pop in tapes. And at first, I didn't care who, you know, I was just like, I don't have a VCR in my room. I don't watch these wrestling tapes. I just brought them home. And I did get, not a lot of people really cared that I was watching stuff like that. But then I remember eventually, I guess when ECW was like the name was known and the reputation, but you know nobody really knew who the characters or any or the performers or anything like that. Like that's when more people started watching it with me, and it never became a thing. You know, it wasn't like there was like a, I didn't do anything as cool as starting like a professional wrestling club or anything like that at JMU, but it was a couple of nights over two semesters where if I had new tapes, you know, just some people would be like, oh, this is really cool. Wow, this is really violent. Oh, look, these guys are dancing around like Kiss, you know, stuff like that. So
was ECW like was really hot when you went there?
It didn't get really hot I have to say ECW probably got really hot, what, like 98, 99?
Sure.
I feel like ECW became a thing when I remember watching Ed and Eddie randomly. It's not a cartoon that I was way too old by the time that was on, but I think I was just watching it as well. And I remember hearing those three kids chant ECW, and that really amused me that this is a Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon show or what have you, and the kids are chanting ECW while two other kids are having a fight, and I think that was around that time too. So.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is kind of a, yeah. It is. It's how something like that. It's kind of the idea of a company just becomes as pervasive, the word I'm looking for, just into other facets. I think around that time, right around the time the attitude. You know, just think about the attitude. That's when wrestling was becoming really mainstream, I started seeing. That was right around the time I was also out of college as well. It was kind of cool, but not unusual for me to see other people that I wouldn't think, say, wearing wrestling T-shirts, walking around wearing like a Goldberg T-shirt or a Steve Austin shirt or whatnot. So especially around Philly when I came back here.
So you weren't around long enough to see Maven as a townie. Maven was a townie around JMU because I had friends who went there, I want to say, between like 98 and 2002. And so he tells a story where he remembers WrestleMania 18 happened. And it was weird because like you'd go to the Buffalo Wild Wings, which always showed pay-per-views. That's where I watched pay-per-views throughout college because they were still showing when I went there. And he said it would be awesome. He's like, 1 month you're watching the pay-per-view and Maven's sitting there at the bar. Next month you're watching it, and Maven is on the pay-per-view. So, like, he told me the day after WrestleMania 18, he went to, like, the Blockbuster to get a movie. And this is, like, you know, like, in the morning time. And Maven's there. And he's, like, and my friend talked to him. He's, like, hey, like, what are you doing here? Like, you were just in Toronto. He's, like, yeah, I took the red eye in. And just, he's, like, I'm wiped. I'm just going to grab a movie and go home and crash because I got to be back on the road tomorrow. It's, like, oh, okay, man. See ya. But I just think, yeah. And then
I didn't even know that Maven was from Harrisonburg.
I think he's from one of the surrounding places, but yeah, like because he would definitely be spotted because I distinctly remember my roommate freshman year, who I didn't get along with, but he knew I was a wrestling fan. On like a Sunday morning or something, he was like, "Hey, do you know the wrestler Mabel?" and at this time, this is the time when Viscera was still on WWE television. And I was like, "Yeah."
Yeah.
And he was like, yes, people were telling me they saw him at, what's the name? At Dave's last night. And I was like, Abel? Really? And then a few months later is when I heard about Maven. And then it was like one of those moments where I'm walking, it clicks on my head. I was like, oh, he meant Maven. Okay. Now
there's a joke in there, but I'm not going to make that joke.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Nope. So did you start watching ECW when you lived in Philly and then continued watching it when you went to school?
Yeah. My high school buddy Brian, who was my main friend that I watched all wrestling with in high school and then after college, I remember him showing me tapes of Eastern Championship Wrestling. And then I started tuning in when Matt Bourne was doing the Born Again stuff. My memory's a little bit blurry, but I can't remember if that was quite when Eastern Championship Wrestling had made the transition to ECW or not. But that's really when I started watching it. And this is like one of my own personal projects I want to do is I want to find out who the program director was around that time for our local TV 48, which was quite almost public. It just felt like a public access channel, you know. But it had advertising and whatnot, you know. It was on the way up at the other end of the UHF dial. But whoever it was a real big wrestling and anime fan, because you would see like ECW, WCCW, British wrestling, USW. I remember seeing like Wolfie D and just a lot of Southern wrestling on there, but it was all in these like long stretches, and then you would see Dragon Ball, you know. It was definitely somebody who was just into all that stuff, and I want to find out who that is, because that was really formative in me becoming a wrestling fan. So,
well, if you're listening to this person who did all that, or if you happen to know somebody out there, if you're a fan, let Billy know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a lot of us in the I hate saying the business, but
the biz.
The biz. Because I got a very, very in the far reaches of quote unquote the business, but a lot of people who are either like indie wrestling fans now or are wrestlers themselves, you know, they owe a lot to the fact that we could trade tapes from stuff that was on TV 48, so in Philadelphia.
Were you a big tape trader?
Not really. Like I said, I would buy stuff at Rock and Roll Express. Again, in college, like there was really nobody to trade tapes with back down in Virginia.
Right, but I didn't know if you were like on the internet finding people who had, you know, trading copies of like ECW television or something with somebody else online.
No, it was just kind of a thing, a hobby that I had to myself. You know, I'm sure in my parents' basement somewhere there's just this one of those old Lazy Susan kind of things of VHS tapes, where like half of these are just old tapes that I bought at Rock and Roll Express, and then the other half are like MTV's Amp or something like that. You know, stuff you watch in college. So.
Right. I definitely felt alone in wrestling fandom, though you'll appreciate this. There was one, it was my sophomore year. And I had just gotten in King of Trios 2008, the first Chikara shows I ever watched.
Sweet.
It was about to be Easter weekend, so basically our campus just got abandoned. And my friend was going home with no particular agenda, so me and another one of my buddies were friends, hopped along, and we just spent the weekend watching King of Trios and eating terrible food. It was
awesome. That's a great holiday weekend, too.
It was. And as soon as it was over, my friend and I looked at each other and said, we're going to that next year. And we did.
That's really awesome, actually.
Because we're the coolest kids in college.
I think that, I mean, one thing about, I feel like now when I meet these younger kids, just kidding, but when I talk to a lot of other people with their college experiences now that the internet is more of a thing, it's you know, it's God, I feel so old saying that, man. Like just to give everybody listening just an idea, I may look really awesome, I may look like a spring chicken, but I'm 35 years old. Okay, so just to give you some
dead.
Yeah, it's to give you some scale. I mean, I started college in 1996 when T1 lines were a brand new thing. The MP3 format was not around yet.
Bill Clinton was the president.
Bill Clinton was a president. Yeah, it's I'm trying to even think of just you know, like
that was before like the Monica Lewinsky scandal.
Yep, way
that
before that.
That was before Prodigy came out with "Smack My Bitch Up."
Mm-hmm. Actually, that came out my second semester of school, I guess. Electronica was becoming a thing, you know. Yeah, and even then, you know, wrestling was still very much in the new generation era.
Yeah, it was that, like, it was just about to become hot.
Yeah, and it was awesome. And you know, going back to this, like, it was really awesome because here I am with these ECW tapes. Watching them, you know, watching them in Bell Hall, and then you would see, it was that episode of Raw where I think they filmed it in Hershey, and I remember watching it with my roommate who hated wrestling, and I remember seeing like Bill Alfonso in the front row, and I started marking out like crazy. He'd be like, wait, I know, like, that's the guy, and Kevin's just like, I don't care, you know. I'm like, no, that's the guy, you know. And then I realized, like, you know, it was a Bulldog Owen. Bulldog and Owen versus probably the Smoking Guns or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized almost the entire front row was all ECW guys. you know, in normal clothes, and people were freaking out over the fact they're there, and Fonzie's running back and forth. And I remember that they just cut to the commercial, and when they came back, none of those guys were in the front row anymore. Huh. You know, like that moment was awesome. It just felt like I was part of this little cult of people, because I watched this poorly produced TV show, and I have all these tapes, and they're just kind of my thing, and maybe slightly less than a dozen people like to watch it with me, but then just to see them on a Monday night cable TV just kind of legitimized. You know, I felt cool. I was somewhat of a raver in college, and again, that was kind of like my little thing. There weren't a lot of us in JMU, you know, like Nation, which was the big nightclub in Washington D.C., was
yes,
yeah, it's, and you know that this, I mean, I don't say just didn't just close, but it's been closed for a couple of years now. But that was also a thing, you know. You go on the ride board. Why do you got to go to D.C.? Oh, I'm going to Nation, and then you would just meet all these other people mm-hmm. that are into the same type of music you are, and then ride out, you know, 3 or 4 hours, go party, not sleep, ride back, and then go to class. It's a funny how I'm just realizing how similar that is to what a lot of the Jakarmi does.
Yeah, that's indie wrestling, man.
Yeah, that's indie wrestling, right?
I'm already planning, because I was lucky enough to get tickets to the Chikara show in May before they sold out, which is so awesome.
How long
by
is
the
that,
way,
man? Sold out.
Well,
like that is really cool. So
well, for me, it's about 4 hours from here to there, but I'm also planning to go to Cleveland for AIW's JT Lightning tournament, which takes place Friday and Saturday. So that's
some weekend.
So that's a 6-hour drive from here to there, a 6-hour drive from Cleveland to Easton, and then a 4-hour drive from Easton back here. So that's like 16 hours total, if I'm doing the math right. I'm going to be haggard.
So you're down in Harrisonburg? Or?
No, I'm in Northern Virginia. I'm like right outside of Easton.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Really, it takes you. Yeah, I guess it would take you 4 hours to get to Easton. Because
I mean, I just did it like 5 days ago.
Yeah, my family all lives down in D.C. or the outlying area. So yeah, it's about 3-4 hours from Philly. Yeah, I keep forgetting that Easton's not exactly right next door to me either. So
yeah, it's like exactly 3 hours from where I am to the ECW arena.
Nice.
So though that's not a thing anymore. Almost maybe will be though.
I hope so. That's like I said, you know, it's a Foreman Mills right now, or it's next to a Foreman Mills. So if I ever want to buy, you know, a Lil' Kim T-shirt, I know where to get one.
Or a South Park T-shirt in 2014.
It's a Joe Marr, I think, is right next to me. So if I want to buy a 99-cent pot or pan, yeah, it's good to have those too. But I want some wrestling there too.
Probably, if you want to buy some pot, you could do that too.
Yeah, I guess that's not really my bag, but
bag. I see what you did there.
Oh man, that was a Freudian slip, I guess. So.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we could talk about your car a bit. So
yeah,
did you just end up going to a show as a fan? Did you have connections with people in the company? How'd you get into as a fan and then into it as the quiz master?
I knew about it. I was very much aware of what Chikara was and the product that it did. You know, like what? I can't believe I just used the word product. But I use very business-like terms in my day job, and
I think everybody does. They're talking about, as long as you respect the biz, I think that's what.
Yeah, the type of show, the type of matches, and the type of entertainment. I was aware of it, but because I was a Ring of Honor fan, so there was a lot of cross-pollination between the wrestlers. You know. So I knew, you know, Claudio came from Chikara. I knew, you know, I was aware of like Eddie, and I would just start looking for these guys, because I was like, oh, okay, you know, Ring of Honor is kind of neat because they pull people talent from all over the world, and that's how I learned about Chikara, and I did become a fan of that. I think obviously through YouTube and Botchamania and stuff like that. I mean, they showed some of the more colorful characters, like, you know, they'd highlight them a whole lot. So I knew of existence. It wasn't until I became friends with Bryce and Tim Donst, actually. Those two guys were the ones who, you know, I did a lot of sketch comedy and comedy, you know, when I was in New York and living in Philadelphia. So that's kind of how I knew Bryce. And then I knew he was a referee, a wrestling referee for Chikara. And then I became friends with Tim through that too. And that's kind of how that all snowballed. So, yeah. And then one day I was doing a wrestling comedy show with Tim and Soldier Ant way back when. And that's after that, you know, it was really successful as a Fringe Festival show. We did it for about a month. And then, I just got a call from their office and said, hey, you know, a lot of the guys really like what you do. And they think we got this idea for a game show host, a game show for the fans. So kind of took that ball and ran with it.
Yeah, because all of a sudden, I think it was the beginning of whatever the 2012 season number is. You just pop up, start asking people questions
hat.
On the show.
Yeah, yeah, 13th hat. It was myself, Zia, and Wink was kind of just overseeing the whole proceedings in kind of like a very scary quality assurance. So yeah.
And you even made Botchamania, now that I think about it.
Yeah, yeah, when I smacked right into a door. And that's I was honored because, again, a lot of old I used to be an educator. I was a music teacher for a couple of years. It's great getting emails whenever I show up on anything Chikara related. You know, I'm sure I invariably get an email saying, hey, Mr. Kumahara, I just saw you in the background doing this thing or talking to this guy. I think the last time I got a whole bunch of them was when I did the second screen broadcast for Wrestling Is Fun a couple months back with Jervis. So, which was a lot of fun to do. So,
you know, you're saying that always because I always feel whenever I had teachers, I'm like the second I'm out of their class, like and the semester's over, they're like I'm dead to them. They just will completely forget about me. But I guess that's not true. You give hope to all of us, Billy.
Well, think about that's the other thing too. I'm proud to say that I'm probably the only JMU alumnus who has directed an orchestra and has been thrown through a table. I think. I don't know. JMU seems like it's become a much more violent school since I left.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
I got to start doing both of those things stat. another quick aside now that you mentioned the violent thing and how terrible it's become, they actually had to stop the movie rental service in Mr. Chips.
What?
Because people kept renting movies and not returning them, which is silly because then you have to end up like paying the price to replace it.
Plus also the internet.
Mm-hmm. Right. and at that point, I mean, the internet was definitely a thing.
Yeah.
But my friend of all people ended up over renting the Marine and having to pay them like $25 to buy it from them, which is way more A than anyone should spend on the Marine, and B more than it would have cost them just to went and purchase the DVD from the store anyways.
Yeah, for like $5.99 in the bargain bin.
Yeah. So
the Marine too.
Same guy who pushed the girl off the fraternity house, by the way.
I want to be friends with this guy. Is he bring him to the show next time? I want to shake his hand and like I'll get my bundle from Sam's Club of the Marine 2. There's probably a Marine 3, and then just have him autograph that. Mm-hmm.
I've taken him to a few shows. He's one of the buddies who I watched Trios 08 with and went to Trios 09. He's a good person. Just who's up for if he's free and we're going to a show, he's usually willing to come along. So if he happens to be coming along to stuff, he's dating somebody now and he's pretty much dead to the world. Like he's that kind of person.
Yeah, so. That's I will say this. It's really tough for me to hang on to someone for more than 8 weeks when I tell her like, yeah, I'm gonna go away this weekend. Why? Well, because of reasons. Yeah. Then they see pictures on my Twitter and my Facebook, and they're just like, "Really, dude?"
But you're not that person who will date somebody, and then all your friends are like, "I haven't seen you in 8 months." Like,
yeah, yeah.
So yeah, getting him to do anything is tough in the first place. So let alone go away for the weekend for wrestling. Although he did go to the Rumble, but that's besides the point. What the hell were we talking about? Chikara, I guess.
Yeah. There we go.
Okay, so you do all that, and then you're doing the trivia shows. What I thought was weird was sometimes they would be extras on the DVDs and sometimes they weren't. Was there any reason behind that you know of?
Not that I know of. I mean, that's up to Smart Mark sometimes.
Mike Burns.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to the producers, I guess, to say, hey, maybe the audio cut, or, you know, sometimes four-letter words slip out. They're amongst fans or something like that. You know, But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I always have a good time doing it no matter what.
Do you create any of the questions yourself?
It's mostly myself, Dr. Keith Lipinski.
Oh, that guy's a jerk.
No, he's not. He's awesome.
he's a good guy. He currently holds the record for longest episode of Fan to Fan. That guy has a lot of things to say and has done a lot of things.
You just reminded me, I owe him a case of hot sauce also.
Oh, what kind of hot sauce?
One of my friends actually grows, he and his wife grow buchalokia peppers, and they make a whole bunch of different types of hot sauces. And I keep meaning to send him a case, and the last time I did, excuse me, you can edit that out. The last time I spoke with him, I was going to send him a couple bottles, but then they actually sold out of their stock at the farmer's market that they normally go to too. So
what a shame.
I know. It's awesome.
There's a good chance Keith is listening to this. If you'd like to say something to him,
Keith, I'm going to get you a bottle of hot sauce, if not a case of it, as soon as possible. So, and I had so many opportunities to do so, and I just keep forgetting to do it. So
there you go.
Yeah, I owe you.
AAWPro.com. While we're at it, anyways.
But it's fun. It's a whole lot of fun. I love how, you know, we really try to stump everybody too. I mean, we try to get really, really, really obscure, and they scale in difficulty as they go along. But yeah, I love seeing everybody too. I mean, no matter where we go, the as far west of the Mississippi as possible, it's so awesome seeing. Just like you were talking about how you do these, you know, you do these circuits just like the wrestlers do. You want to go and support everybody and see all the different shows. But it's really awesome when I see somebody that I saw 11 hours ago, you know, in one part of the country, and then I see them at the next show that we show up to the next day too. Like, that's so awesome.
Oh yeah, like the first time I think I met you was at the Unity doubleheader in Chicago Ridge.
Yeah,
I'm not from there, and you're not from there, but you know, you made the trip with the company. I made it as a fan, and that's how it goes. And there's so many times, because I went to Tag World last year.
Yep.
And now it's basically just become this annual thing I do where I go to Chicago and watch wrestling with friends. And there was people there who I'd seen at Easton in Philadelphia, because they're from that area, going out there too. And I was like, I thought I'd be the only one doing this, but nope. Just a big community of fans who love their wrestling, love their
chair. I don't know if any other companies really foster that type of kinship amongst their fans. You know, I don't hear – you know, as far as the big leagues are concerned, I never hear – other than – that one dude who always shows up on TV because he's got like a trust fund or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah. Like I never,
like, there's definitely people I see at like front row of every pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But that's, well, you know, but that's a little different, I think.
Yeah. There's the company, you know, like there's companies that have a lot of fans, but I think Chikara, you know, the fans are, it's kind of like how we used to go to raves. You know, when you and I used to go to raves all the time back in the day.
Yeah, because I definitely did that.
Yeah, but you know, people that I would link up with, people from Indiana or down in North Carolina or something like that, and we'd go and drive out to DC to Nation or something, like, or go back up to Maine. You know, it's the same type of familial kinship that you have amongst each, because you all really love this one thing. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you know, you obviously hear people like traveling to WrestleMania, but that's WrestleMania,
mm-hmm.
And I think people try to make pilgrimages out to PWG because that's such a big thing now.
I would love to do that. I really want to do that this year.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of good friends of mine all live out in LA now, and they love Chikara, but the closest thing they have to that is you know, they're like, hey, we start going to PWG because of Chikara. You know, we like seeing Chuck, or we like seeing the Young Bucks or
oh,
what.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, I have gone to WrestleMania the past couple of years, and I didn't go to 30 this year because it's so expensive and logistical reasons and XYZ. But I've been trying to make up for not going to that by doing a bunch of other cool things, and I'm hoping that Battle of Los Angeles is one of those things I get to do.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to go out. Hopefully, I can get out to the West Coast at the end of March, and if there's anything going on, I just want to go and catch it.
Yeah, hopefully.
And yeah, that's kind of, you know, as I travel for work, that's kind of what I want to do, is just go out and see more shows and run into more people. You know, I feel kind of like I'm spoiled. I get to see all this awesome talent, you know, because I'm part of this crew of people with the char, but at the same time, you know, it's like I do want to see what the feel what the vibe is like, you know, with some other companies or, you know, with this roster of people or just meet, you know, just hang out and be a fan. That's what it all comes down to. So
yeah, I guess that's, I don't want to say the negative, but the kind of the thing that happens when you become a part of the company is you're still a fan, but you can't be a complete total fan, if that makes sense.
Because I've got stuff I gotta do. I gotta run back and forth behind the scenes.
Yeah, there's some bit of professionalism you have to hold up.
Yeah, and I feel real bad about it too, especially because I really hadn't seen a lot of people. National Pro Wrestling Day was great because I got the few moments that I did get to see of the show. It was kind of cool. I liked walking through the crowd and just seeing people. Seth, for example, he's a friend of a friend that I found out, and we talk to each other on Twitter all the time. But I was like, I felt like, you know, some of these other, you know, people that are known as part of the Chikarami, Walt too. It's just like, I just want to be like, hey, you just want to hang out. I was like, I gotta go and run and do this thing.
Yeah,
so I gotta make sure this guy has water. I gotta make sure, you know, things like that. So, yeah.
Well, what has been the coolest moment for you as a fan, as being a part of Chikara? Like maybe somebody you met, like maybe an ECW contemporary or something that you met that you're a big fan of, or like, you know, because King of Trios had a bunch of those guys.
Dude, that's a real tough question. That's a real tough one. I mean, meeting Tatanka was really awesome. I think a lot of these good memories all come from King of Trios. You know what? I know what it was. It was when Tito Santana came running out.
Yeah, that was cool.
Gavin and I were just standing right by the commentary table, and we both didn't know that he was really going to be there, and we just started jumping up and down like little kids. Like that floored me. It was so awesome seeing him live. Like I think that would be the most. The biggest mark out moment for me right now. So,
and it all comes back. It all comes full circle, man. Cause he came out to Girls in Cars.
I know. Yeah. I think that's what it was. I was just jumping up and down like a little kid the entire time he was in the ring. So yeah,
that was pretty great, man. That Trios was really fun.
Wasn't it though? And that's what I, you know, my dad was just like, well, let me see this, you know, cause he as a little kid, he was just, yeah, he taught, you know, that's his thing, and he likes to do it. And then I think it, since I never stopped watching it, you know, it was just kind of like, well, you know, my son's into wrestling, whatever. And then after Trios, I was visiting my folks, and I had a DVD, and I'm like, just watch this. And he was just floored by just the spectacle of everything too, because in his mind he was just like, okay, it's just, you know, King Kong Bundy beating up Hulk Hogan or whatever.
Sure.
And he's not used to, you know, he's like, this is moving really fast. I remember him saying that. He's an older guy. He's like, this is moving very fast.
Yeah.
So.
I buy that.
Yeah.
Did your parents ever have that thing when you were a kid and you're watching wrestling? Like, this is just a face. And then later on in life, I guess not.
I remember being probably in 9th or 10th grade and just being up on a Saturday morning and watching a Skip and Sonny promo, as one with their debut promo, where it looked like a fake, like they were looking at you through your television screen.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I remember my oldest sister and my mom just happened to be in the room at the same time, and they were wondering what I was watching. And then my mom just kind of, she got sucked into it. She's like, what is this? You know, what is the show? What is this exercise show where they're just making fun of people? And then when she realized it was a pro wrestling promo, she's like, oh, this is just all hype. They're not really in good shape or anything like that. Like they're standing right in front of you right now. Like they're two people in really good shape making fun of us for not, you know, it was really a meta moment. You know, I think she was actually talking at Sonny at that point through the TV. Like, you're just all hype.
That is not at all the story that I thought this was going to be. I thought it was going to be, they thought you were watching porn or something. They're like, what are you watching? Definitely not porn, I swear.
Yeah, Sonny cut a promo on my mom, and my mom was upset by it. That's pretty much what it was. So.
All I remember was finding out that Zip was Tom Pritchard, and my mind was blown.
That kind of, okay, when there were things like that going on, that used to piss me off. When there was those really abrupt gimmick changes. You know, because I just think that's obviously one of the, he was one of the heavenly bodies, right?
See, but I didn't notice that because I'm dumb, I guess.
That one really stuck out in my mind.
You're also older than me then too.
Yeah, yeah.
So that probably helps.
Been, uh, you know, more either worried about my grades or paying attention to my high school girlfriend. But no, I was just angry. There was no internet for me to rage about. Be like, that was Dr. Tom Pritchard from the Heavenly Bodies a week ago.
You faxed Dave Meltzer.
I know. It's just, I'm trying to think of any other abrupt gimmick change. Oh yeah. Like anytime anybody before the Attitude Era and before the ratings wars, before anytime somebody went from one company to another, my friend Brian and I would just be like, oh, you know, I remember seeing the Mankind promos and just being like, ah, that's Cactus Jack. That's just the guy with like the dumb vignettes on WCW. Because I think I watched a lot of the Cactus Jack stuff in ECW in like retrospect.
Right.
You know, because I didn't 48. The programming on 48 was really weird. Sometimes I'd catch it. It would be on really late. And I just, you know, I'd watch it when I could, but I didn't really start getting the older episodes till I went to college. But I remember like just kind of groaning when I was like, I like Cactus Jack because he does all this crazy stuff, but then they're putting him in a mask and now he's, you know, now he's doing this stupid stuff in WWF and then easily won me over. You know, like 5 months later, he was, you know, Mankind rules. But yeah, I'm trying to think of like other times when people would just switch gimmicks. I mean, when Doink became Matt Bourne, that was really cool.
What about when like Papa Shango became Kama?
I didn't figure that one out for a while.
Yeah, me neither.
That one was actually really, really. That one was kind of under the radar until I remember just being like, "Wait, those are the same tattoos." But he was well into the gimmick at that point. Mm-hmm. That like it was just like, oh, "I'm not mad at that." Okay, I just because UFC was becoming a thing, you know. So I was like, "Okay, we get it. I guess see what they're doing." Yeah, that one didn't bother me.
Did you know that Fake Diesel was Isaac Yankem?
No, I didn't know that. I just remember not liking that at all.
Yeah, me neither. Even as a little kid, I was like, I really hate this. I really do not care for this.
Did I make this up, or was Razor in another company known as Hack/Ramirez?
He might have. I know he was Big Titan in Japan.
Okay.
I think Rick Bogner was his real name.
Okay. I feel like... Or that might have just been what my friend Brian called him because that's like a Bobo name for it. Like, hey, Razor Ramon, Hack/Ramirez.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
my it's speaking of crazy wrestling names, my friend had just found out that one of his fiance's coworkers' dads worked for like Capital Wrestling, or grandfather probably worked for like Capital Wrestling in the 60s. Right. He's like in his 80s now and like his memory's slipping, but he always likes to talk about old wrestling. And my friend would just, I don't remember his name on the top of my head, but he just typed him into Google and found out that he wrestled this guy named Gordo Chihuahua, which I was like, that is the greatest wrestling name I've ever heard.
Gordo Chihuahua.
So, like, I would just joke, like, I hope he's going to be at National Pro Wrestling Day. You know, things like that.
Gordo Chihuahua. I mean, that sounds, yeah, that sounds like a Cards Against Humanity, like, combo.
He really does.
Yeah.
Or it's like a super racist name they'd have for like a Mexican wrestler in WWF.
He's not actually Mexican.
No. Yeah. Like, I'm surprised that's not Camacho's gimmick right now, to be honest with you.
Ah, poor guy. Yeah, the Samoan pretending to be a Mexican guy.
You're the son of Ming. Like, is that really the best thing they could come up with?
Yeah.
Hey, remember when Ming was in Chikara?
Do I? Absolutely, I remember that. Yeah, that's... Again, that's one of those things where I was afraid to talk to him.
Dude was wrestling in sweatpants, and it was easily the most terrifying person on that card.
He frightened me as a child, and I still was like in awe of seeing him at Trios like that. Yeah, he's just a big dude. For people who don't have a sense of scale, he's a gigantic mountain of a man. So.
I think
and as a Pacific, awesome. Yeah, I'm a Pacific Islander myself, but I'm a tiny Pacific Islander, so I'm not Samoan or anything like that. And he looked like he could just like bite my head off if I said the wrong thing. So
I was just really impressed he came in and did that because isn't he like a car salesman in Florida now?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, everyone's got to eat, and I'm sure that is a thing that they use to their advantage there too. So. I definitely would. If I ran a car dealership, I'm like, hey, guys, look, it's Meng.
Oh, hell yeah. That would be what my name tag said if I was Meng. Maybe Haku. I don't know. One of the two. I don't know what more people know him as. Haku or Meng.
I think I knew him as more as Meng because he was you know, from WCW.
See, and I know him as Aku because he's from WWF.
Yeah, it's a this is the whole thing is that I liked the WCW characters. I always felt like they had a bigger, more colorful cast of wrestlers.
WWF, but, really?
No, WCW. Excuse me.
No, you said WCW, but that's why I'm so perplexed because I feel like WWF was so colorful and cartoony.
But
not that WCW wasn't, but you know,
WWF used their guys better.
Okay.
Especially during the new generation era, which is one that is more fresh in my mind, like more formative to me, is just I just remember seeing all these guys in WCW, like I wish that guy was in WWF as that guy, you know, like Vader I thought was awesome in WCW, and then I just really didn't like the Attitude Era version of Vader.
Oh, I thought you were gonna be like, man, I really wish Roadblock were in WWF. See, because they're talking about like the wimpy guys, like the stupid characters, not like the main eventers.
I always wanted to see Glacier in WWF, but
also in Chikara though.
Yep. Yeah. That's before my time in Chikara, but I remember when Glacier debuted. I'm like, why wasn't he in WWF like 3 years ago when Mortal Kombat had just come out or whatever? I think that was about 2 or 3 years after Mortal Kombat was debuted. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, really.
That would have been so crazy. And I remember when Al Snow was Avatar, just insisting up and down to my buddy. I was like, this is totally inspired by Virtua Fighter. He's like, no, it's not. I'm like, oh, it's like he looks like he would be a Virtua Fighter or a Street Fighter character. So he didn't believe me. And I don't know if that's the truth or anything like that, but I always felt like, you know, Avatar should have been a creative character in like Virtua Fighter.
Yeah, I mean, that day and age, I think that's definitely kind of what they were aiming for. It's like, yeah. Oh, kids like video games. Let's make this character that's loosely kind of based on that.
Yeah, that's trying to go back to other guys that had really weird gimmicks, and then they just abruptly changed them without any explanation, or it was just a real flimsy one. Like,
well, I know for me as a kid, I wondered why all of a sudden Sparky Plug and Bark Gun were the Midnight Express.
Well, then they explained that. I thought Cornette explained that during one of their things, though, how they both came, they both trained in Smoky Mountain. And he's like, yeah, I took them under my tutelage, and then
I remember cutting a promo, but I don't remember exactly what his reasoning was. He was just like, oh, they're the Midnight Express now, and I was like, but race car driving and lassoing, what?
Cowboy and race car driver together at last, and it's and I remember
and one's blonde now. I'm confused.
I remember my wrestling-hating college roommate was just like, okay, so that guy's me, and is that guy me too? Because it just both said Emmy on the trunks.
Yeah.
I was like, I get it. That's clever. And then
thing with like I distinctly remember this. It was I think it was winter of '98 when my cousin and I, like, I was talking to my cousin who they were wrestling fans at the time, and then like he had watched Raw that week and I hadn't. He was like, yeah, so you know Bradshaw and Farouk? It's like, yeah, they're a tag team now. I was like, what? What are you talking about? He's like,
yeah, that was one of those other things where it was really just abrupt and bizarre, and it was just, oh yeah, because Cyrus the Virus waved at them.
Yeah,
now they're
like,
a
yeah,
tag team.
He's like, yeah, the Jackal's managing them, and I was like, get out of here! Like you're making this up. I swore up and down he was making it up. Then I watched it, and I was like, oh, I guess this is a real thing. And it turns out it was magical.
Yeah, it was that they were just throwing everything at the wall to make it stick.
Definitely.
You know, just see what sticks stuck. And there was a lot. I'm trying to think of like, okay, let's shift now. Like gimmicks that you only saw once or twice. Do you remember Stephanie McMahon's? And this is much later. She had a personal trainer.
Muffy.
Okay, no one else remembers that.
Yeah, I do. She was there for like an episode.
Yeah, I remember. I distinctly remember that being like, this character has let you know this. I want to see this character every week now.
I remember.
There's no reprisal to.
It's like they had this female ninja who'd run around and interfere in matches. Then she was unmasked as Tori on Sunday Night Heat, and then bang, it was gone.
Yep. Yeah, wasn't she brought back later just as regular Tori?
No, I think that was the last we ever saw of her in WWE, because it was like a Sunday Night Heat, like right before. Like, it was between, like, No Way Out and Royal Rumble 2000.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Because then that happened, then they bought WCW, and then Tori was just gone.
Yeah.
So.
Do you remember the vignettes? And I think maybe there was only one or two of them, of Blue Meanie and Richards in WWF.
Oh, when they did the Blonde Bitch project?
Yeah, okay, that's what it was called. Yeah. It was like Blair Witch Project, but yeah.
It was like when Sonny left, or I think it was. And that's what they did then.
I want to know what happened to all those, you know, who when those many meetings, because they had to have shooting scripts for all that.
Right.
I want to see where that would have went. And like all these aborted angles and these like mid-card vignettes and whatnot. Like that's for a lot of reasons that interests me a whole lot. Yeah. So
I think it interests a lot. Like GTV never really paid off anywhere.
Yep. They should bring that back. I think that should be brought back.
They actually mentioned it. Like WWE does their YouTube show called Inbox. Where they have like a wrestler answer questions, and someone asked Goldust about GTV, and he just, you know, said some mysterious answer like, "That is not to be revealed right now," or "It's a long ongoing thing." And I'm like, "Come on, man!"
The slowest burn ever in the history of wrestling is just it's Hornswoggle TV.
So slow. Oh my gosh.
But I'm sure there's tons of others. I'm trying to think of other. I know WCW ones. If there are any, yeah.
WCW is all you, because I didn't really watch a bunch of WCW when I was a kid.
I mean, there's the one that Foley writes about in his book, and I do remember, and I think this was probably what left that bad taste in my mouth about Mick Foley, Cactus Jack in WCW, was the series of vignettes where he was in an insane asylum, and the insane asylum was just full of people doing bad celebrity impressions of those celebrities from the movies that they are most famous from. There was a Rain Man guy and a Jack Nicholson guy and all of the impressions were just really outdated for the early 90s, mind you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it sounds like typical wrestling.
Yep. I just remember watching. I was like, just get this off of my TV. I can't stand it. And the whole thing. And you never saw, I remember just never seeing Cactus Jack, but it was somebody looking for Cactus Jack. And then they were just talking to all these different people. Yeah. Okay. So you know a guy that does a crappy Jack Nicholson. Okay. Why am I not watching, you know, Ice Train now?
I do remember when they did hype videos for Brakus in WWE.
Yeah, and you never saw that guy.
I definitely never saw him. I feel like he may have had like a televised match on like Jacked or Metal or Shotgun Saturday Night or something like that, but I certainly never saw him.
Yeah, he just never showed up anymore. There's a lot of dudes like that. I feel like I feel like that happened a whole lot more. In the late 80s, early 90s, where somebody would just be built up, or there was hype. Somebody.
I know. I actually never saw it till they did the top 25 like most bizarre angles feature on WWE.com. But they had that mystery man character that was like Brutus Beefcake under a mask, who would just basically if heels were cheating or beating up a guy after the match, he'd run in and then chase him away, and then like that happened for like 3 or 4 weeks on Superstars, and then it was over.
I never saw that.
Yeah, I never saw it either until they post a video of Earthquake and him on WWE.com, like on their YouTube channel. So you can go find it if you want, but that was certainly something I had never heard of until that article came out last year.
God, poor Beefcake, man. It seems like he always had 10 million different things going on. I remember when he was the Booty Man.
And the Zodiac.
Yeah. Oh. I didn't mean to. Oh, yeah, I groaned. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm so...
It happens.
Yeah. But it's funny though, because I'm not embarrassed about things like that as being a wrestling fan. You know, it's just like, I think what it is again, being part, you know, that I'm sure in that whole process of pitching a character to a wrestler, like they just do it because they find something they like about it. So.
Yeah.
Or then maybe they don't, or maybe they don't. But you know, it's the Booty Man. I could totally see why Brutus Beefcake won't do that, and you know, become the Booty Man. I mean, come on, but you got to hang out with Kimberly all the time. But yeah, good lord, what was that one where it was like Colonel Parker in a cage? That
yeah,
was definitely.
Don't know much about that WCW stuff. I know Colonel Parker, like, and he was at Bunkhouse Bunk at Dick Slater and all that. Awesome video my friend shared with me was like a WCW Saturday night where they're walking out and they just shove Wildcat Willie for no reason. Like Wildcat Willie just mind his own business and they just start messing with him. And Wildcat Willie even has like that, what the hell, guys? I'm just standing here. Kind of like they push him around. Awesome.
Sometimes I feel that I would just like to, you know, and I just like to film stuff like that. You know, just like, guys, just come up with your own vignettes and angles. Go for it. You know, Chuck's 24/7 belt is
that
awesome.
I've said it before.
Of that working well. That's
I've said it before. I'll say it again. Chuck's 24/7 hardcore title reign, best thing to come out of Chikara dying.
Yeah.
Even if they're not really related at all.
It's awesome. It floors me every single time I watch it, and just to be able to see stuff like that. You know, like, it's just like, hey, I have my iPhone. Let me just film something right now. Like, that's I love how now, because of the ease of technology, things like that can happen.
Oh yeah,
it's bringing that back to Chikara too. For the Condor's scavenger hunt that they made everybody to go on. How awesome was it that Babs was able to broadcast that online, you know, through Ustream? That was insane. Yeah, I hate to see what her data bell looked like at the end of the day, but that was amazing, just to see people being able to update and, you know, let us know what, you know, like, where they were at and what was going on. I was trying to help out where I could too, but like that was so awesome. So.
Well, let's get into it. Now that we're at the Chikara and the death and all that stuff, because I'm sure we've wasted people's time talking about other nonsense.
College, yeah, you're listening to the JMU podcast with Devin Ford and Billy Kumara.
We'll tag them on Twitter. I'm sure they're going to love hearing those stories. So when did you know that Chikara was planning to go black?
The day it happened.
So at Anniversario, that's when you found out?
Yeah.
Wow. Did not know there was like different levels of who knew, who didn't know, or because I feel like people, there was a lot of fans anyway that had a sneaking suspicion that something was up with that show. I don't know if a lot of people figured that was what's it going to be. There's certainly rumors flying around at that time, but
there's rumors flying around because of a lot of other reasons too. But
sure,
yeah, and we won't go into this, but that all that stuff was just stupid. But but yeah, it was at that show. That's really what it came down to. I mean, it was just like, now what? So, yeah.
So then take us to the now what, because you made an appearance in at least one of the Ashes videos. You were a part of the scavenger hunts and these other things that came about. What was your involvement in the process of kind of making those all happen?
Being a fly on the wall, really. You know, it's I do a lot with the Wrestling Is channel. So I help out Jervis with the Gentlemania videos and also the Supper of the Hatfield videos. So that's like where my involvement really is with that. So it's tried to chronicle as much as I could. If I need to be somewhere, I'll be somewhere and just try to get everything I can. So
it's one of those things where you're like, they say, hey, we have this plan that we'd like to do that we're going to try to execute. If you can be there, great.
Yep.
Okay. Did you know that National Pro Wrestling Day was going to be where they were going to relaunch Chikara and things were going to be great?
I think it was, everything was leading up to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was looking at the story arc, I mean, it was pretty obvious, like, that's where it was headed. You know, everybody, Icarus was rallying everybody. It had to be there. There's no other place where it could have been.
I mean, I think once people saw the dramatic change between this and last year's National Pro Wrestling Day, it was sort of like, okay, now we see what this year's version is for.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And it was awesome. I mean, it was a very well, like, it's part of the nature of TV wrestling, which gave us all these awesome memories of the Attitude Era, is that I think it's conditioned everybody to be used to a certain type of storytelling.
Mm.
I guess an analogy would be, I'm an improv nerd, so it'd be like short form versus long form. Like, whose line is it anyway? Versus, say, it's a good example of long form improv. There really isn't one on TV. I mean, I know the writing process for a lot of the UCB TV shows that the UCB talent are on. Like, they do long form, but that's people are so used to just seeing an idea or a premise posited at the top of a show, and then that whole conflict is resolved within 3 hours, you know, and seeing it stretched out amongst, what, 9 months?
Yeah, about, like, eight, nine months. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it was taxing for a lot of fans, and I think that there were some criticisms that I think there were valid, but you know, over the last few days, reading a lot of people's responses to National Pro Wrestling Day, it seems like, you know, they once they saw the payoff to it, it just made a it was a relief to them.
So. There are some people I know talking to it feel like, because there's the whole I am Chikara, we are Chikara thing.
Yeah.
And some people still do not feel like they were involved in that aspect. Like, I know one of my friends was saying the vibe that he got from a lot of this was, if you're not doing the scavenger hunts or you're not following along with all this stuff, then you're not really a part of this and you're not Chikara and sort of that. So it felt like, and he was a big Chikara fan, and it's feels, yeah. And that, so I think there was the... there was always the risk of abandoning some of those loyal people from the get go.
I mean, the most I can say to that is at least I feel like, I don't know, I'd love to sit and talk to that person and feel like that man, what's, again, I'm trying to just relate to how that person must feel, because you can only invest so much if, you know, we have a lot of fans out in New Zealand, just really far away places like New Zealand, Germany, you know, Great Britain, places like that, and whether it was by, like, I'm talking specifically about the scavenger hunt, the design of the scavenger hunt, or you know, I think there were a lot of ways for people to get involved and invested in the story, like what was going on. I mean, there's a lot of other things out there, all the Titor conglomerates websites, all the Condor stuff, and
like the No Private Army blog and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, those elements were there. Maybe there's a level of interactivity that they wanted, because certainly, you know, opening up just being there to throw open a garage door to a storage facility, like that's certainly was a special feeling. But I think someone like Babs, like, did her best to try to bring those people in by chronicling everything. I actually was really excited when the one thing I really liked watching that was when they were at Love Park and just seeing Gavin for like a half a second, something like that, I thought would be really cool. Like, when I was at home, like, I was like, oh wait, there's Gavin. And then they're like, it really was him. So, I don't know, man. I feel bad. I'll be honest.
You don't have to feel bad about it. I mean, because I mean, you were there. You saw how excited and pumped, and people were crying and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's tough. I mean, you can't satisfy everybody, and it's hard to make a balance. And you know, hopefully those people will be willing to get, now that Chikara is coming back, they'd hopefully be willing to at least give it a chance, see what's going to go down, and see what happens from now till then. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that Chikara sold out their show in a matter of, what, 5 days or so since? Not even. Like, three
not
days
even.
since tickets have been on sale, with no card announced, just a date in a building. And that is astonishing in this day and age.
And, yeah, show me another company that can do that, just on the name alone, just on the expectations, the reputation that, you know, we've built for the type of quality of matches that we put on, too. That says a lot about Chikara, but it also says a lot about we are Chikara. It's not just the wrestlers in the ring, but the fans make a huge part of that. Everyone's as much part of the show now. Like I think that's how I feel about it. You know, the going back to the scavenger hunt, it's like this was their story as much as it was about, you know, the wrestlers getting shut down and attacked by the Condor security.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
were there any surprises that for you at the National Pressing Day, when you saw the big angle that happened at the end, was there anything that you saw that you were like, oh man, like that is something I did not expect?
Heidi and Joe, I did not expect that to get. I didn't expect that to get interrupted in the way that it did. I guess that was a lot of people that stormed the ring.
Oh,
that was disorienting. I didn't realize it. It was like, you know, I was at the Trocadero when Condor hit the ring, but there
kind of easy to spot, but it was just, it was like overwhelming. that was probably about 30 people at National Pro Wrestling Day. But, you know, like I thought at Never Compromise I was relatively safe from everything, but and this, like, I was getting shoved from behind, you know, it was more chaotic. You know, I didn't think it would have gotten as chaotic as, like, nothing could have topped as how chaotic everything was at Never Compromise, but this was as close to pandemonium that I've probably ever experienced throughout the entire end of the show. You know, just one thing after another just kept topping and topping and heightening what was going on. And then, I'm sure as everyone knows, a freaking DeLorean drove in to the venue. So
that's by far the most insane thing of all. Like, yeah. Where does even one find one of those these days?
How many were made? Like 200? I know I was talking to my folks about this, and they're just like, yeah, weren't those used to smuggle cocaine? So.
Weren't they also like incredibly unreliable vehicles?
Yeah, they're just metal, right? They don't even paint them. Like, it's just like.
Do you happen to watch Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, the Jerry Seinfeld show?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of those before. Yeah, I've seen the one like Michael Crichton. Yeah.
Did you see the Patton Oswalt one that came out a few weeks ago?
No, I didn't.
So, you know, they always get like a car to drive around and then go get coffee. I mean, obviously that's the name of the show, but they got a DeLorean for that episode and it legit breaks down in like the first minute or so of taping. And I have to get into another, like just like a rental car or something, like a normal ass car to go get coffee. So like those things are not really designed to be functional.
I'm sure everybody just kind of, you know, people who do own them, they're foreign cars too. There was a really low production run on them, and three, it's who knows how to work on those things. So
yeah, and obviously there's the rare occasion like this where someone will need to they can farm it out to somebody for a few shekels for just an instance like this. I mean, the out of time license plate and everything, like, it was just perfect. Oh man, good times.
Yeah, there's and the one thing I think is funny is that because of everything that was going on, a lot of people didn't realize what was going on until after the show, or when they were leaving. There's was this DeLorean here. I actually overheard people be like, "Oh, that's why everyone was screaming and freaking out." And then seeing everyone's reactions online when they watched the replay of it.
Yeah,
and as you know, Smart Mark could have been in a more perfect location. Like that was such a perfect. You know, I was watching it when I got home too. I drove home from Easton, came home, opened up my laptop, and then I watched where I was just at. And then when I saw it from that angle, it just looked so cool. So
yeah, because from wherever I was standing, I saw Archie and them walking, but I could not see the DeLorean.
Yeah.
But then, like, Archie came out, and he was taking pictures, like, everyone, let's go outside the DeLorean. I was like, wait, what? and then I see pictures of it online. I'm like, holy crap, that is awesome.
I heard somebody, heard somebody gasping, and they sounded like that clip from Troll 2 when the kid is screaming because the girl is melting into vegetable soup or whatever.
Yes,
like, he was just like, "Oh my god,
they're eating her, and then they're gonna eat me."
We didn't say that part, but just his reaction was.
Man, Troll 2 was phenomenal. And
anybody who hasn't watched that, go watch it right now. We'll wait and then. Come back, and then we'll, yeah, okay.
Pause, watch Troll 2, then go watch Best Worst Movie, the documentary.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there's a documentary on that. It's, on a tangent here, I, speaking of weird documentaries, I just watched that one about bronies.
This is like, what is it with these stupid Chikara podcasts where these brony things come up? Because I feel like...
Wait, what?
So Chikarison did one with Tom Green for WrestleFolks. They talked about the brony documentary. I swear it came up on another podcast. I don't think it was one that that Mike did. And now it's coming up here. What is going on? Is it just because that Brony documentary hit Netflix? Is that what this is all about?
I'm coming clean, Kevin. We're all secretly bronies.
Oh, God. While we're on this tangent, I listened to Leonard F. Jacarson's comic book podcast, as I am a comic book fan. The Weekly Long Box, for those who do not know. And I don't remember how long it was ago at this point, but a My Little Pony comic just started being published. And I went to my store to pick up my books like I do on a weekly or, you know, couple weeks, yeah. whatever. I was picking up on that Wednesday, and this adult female comes in and she's just browsing books, and she knows the My Little Pony book, and she kind of gets excited and she's flipping through it. And the owner of the shop is there, and he says to her, "If you buy that book, you'll be the first female to purchase that book today." I was just like, "Oh wow, this is a real subculture here."
This is I watched it. I don't get it. I get why people like it, and I get why. But you know, if it's all about the positive message and the writing, which, you know, I watch enough and be like, okay, it's kind of clever. Why, you know, I kind of feel the same way about the show Community, or hey, why isn't there like an Ed and Eddie con or anything? What is it about the? It asked more questions than it answered for me.
Well, I hear that it like takes the brony side. It's supposed to be like a sympathetic thing. See, I want a brony's documentary being like, look at these weirdos, right? I don't want something where I'm feeling like good about them or whatever. Because no, just no.
Well, here's another question: why did I not know what Tara Strong actually looks like until I watched that? Also,
did you really not?
No, she's a fox.
I mean, did you not watch the Batman animated series?
Yeah, I did, but I didn't know what she looked like.
Did you not watch Powerpuff Girls? Come on.
Yeah, I watched Powerpuff. Oh, going back to JMU. Okay. I used to eat that Powerpuff Girls breakfast cereal.
Oh my gosh.
Like religiously. And that the only place I ever found it was at, like, Food Lion or whatever, when I was and it was like frosted Chex mixed with fudge on the inside and Pop Rocks.
I've never heard of this.
And marshmallows. Yeah, that's insane. Because it was supposed to have Chemical X on it, which was really just Pop Rocks and sugar. That stuff was awesome. So,
as a raver, it makes sense you'd eat that cereal.
Absolutely. But yeah, let's talk about more about Tara Strong and how hot she is.
Mother of Roderick.
Well, now you just ruined everything. Okay, here's also okay, and this is another. Hey, man, now we're talking about this brony thing. John Delancey is in this documentary, right? Whom we all know as Q.
From Next Generation.
Next Generation, yeah, from Star Trek to Star Trek. I guess he lives in Philadelphia, maybe still.
Oh no.
Yeah. I never met him, but a really good friend of mine. One day, a bunch of us were all supposed to meet up for drinks, and a really good buddy of mine. Showed up late, and he said that he witnessed a vehicular manslaughter.
Sheesh.
Okay, this is just bear with me now. He was on Broad Street, and a car just drove up onto the sidewalk and nailed somebody, and was late because he had to be questioned by the police about this. And the person standing next to him was none other than Mr. John Delancey. Who was also like had to like they just asked him questions, and my friend Wes is a big Star Trek fan, and I guess just when he had that dawn of the twinge of realization that he's standing next to Q, just kind of like turned. He said yeah, I turned, and I looked at him, and he's like, I didn't even get it out of my throat when John Lance just looked at me and just shook his head like, do not even. No, you're not even going to talk to me about Star Trek right now.
He just saw some stuff. A vehicular manslaughter just happened.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not really Q. I can't reverse time or bring people back.
That's phenomenal. I don't even. I don't even. That's all I can say.
Awesome. We just kind of jumped from like A to C to 9 to Greek letter or whatever.
That's how this podcast go, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well. I mean, I guess we've exhausted a pretty big list of topics. I feel like we could probably do this again sometime.
Totally. I'm totally down. You know, it's just yeah. I'm sure we can dig up some more awful stuff that happened at college.
And if you're a Chikara fan, I'm really sorry.
I have no apologies. Yeah, it's
I apologize. I had a good time. I think we told some good tales. So I think that's all.
Yeah, man.
Look, Chikara's back. Okay, what do you want? What do you want from me? Go listen to the 50 Quackenbush interviews out there. Go listen to Leonard of Chikara, Son of Wrestle, folks. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, Chikara's back. Again, it's like I put out on my Twitter. It's nice to see my family back together.
Aww.
Like, that's and I'm not, you know, it's the wrestlers and the fans. And it's nice to have everybody just like come back together and just have a good time. It's been a dark year and a half, I'd say. So let's party for this next season. Yeah. Seriously.
I was going to say, hey, come on May 25th, but apparently you can't. So
yeah. You apparently can, so buy the DVD when it comes out from Smart Mark Video. Yeah,
buy the DVD. Support Smart Mark Video. Those guys are really awesome.
Yeah, nice. So. Worked in a little plug there.
Yeah, there you go. They'll appreciate that. Well, what plugs do you have?
You can follow me on Twitter at Billy Kumo. If you're a fan of comedy, start looking around, and you're a fan of the Upright Citizens Brigade. You're going to start, just keep an eye on them because we've got a lot of things in the works. You might see a couple familiar faces showing up in some shows. I believe if you're out on the West Coast, this was just announced today, the Midnight Show, which is at UCB LA's, is one of their premier weekly sketch comedy shows. It's written by Eric Moneypenny and one of my really good friends, Heather Campbell. They're two of the writers for that. Well, there's going to be a special midnight show on March 1st at midnight, hence the name, that is hosted by none other than Bryce Remsburg, the Kentucky Gentleman, Chuck Taylor, and a special guest, El Hijo del Ice Cream. So go check that out at UCB LA on March 1st, right at midnight. It's going to be, if you're a Chikara fan out in California, this is a great chance to come see them do something a little outside of the box, which is awesome. If you're on the East Coast, and again, you're a UCB fan or you're a comedy fan, you can come check out the UCBW, which is the Upright Citizens Brigade wrestling show. Right now, the Colony actually has been the Upright Citizens Brigade tag team champions for some time now.
I saw pictures of that when it happened.
And, it's surprising. You know, it's no surprise that comedians just fall easily to super kicks out of nowhere. So it's they've been – I haven't even tallied how long they've been the champions of UCB. So just keep an eye there. As far as my own projects, I'm one of the writers of Nerd News. That's spelled with a K. And both the nerd and the news on our Scrapple TV YouTube channel, which is a – it's quasi weekly. I get back on the ball. Like tech news show that we do usually release every Monday, and that's hosted by the lovely Fallon Jaslin. Trying to think of anything else I want to plug that I'm tangentially related to. If you're fans of video games, I don't know. I like video games. You like video games, Kevin?
I do like video games.
Video games are pretty awesome. Some of my best friends do a little show called The Continue Show, and it's, you can find them. All you gotta do is just pop that into YouTube, look that up. You can always watch them. They also have another podcast called Fantasy Fiction that I will be showing up on in the near future. And then they also have they filmed a pilot to a web series called Smart Guys, which I will also be making an appearance in as well. So actually I had somebody, I feel bad because I forget his name. But he was at MAGFest, and he's like, yeah, a bunch of panels at MAGFest knew you, we're talking about you, and that made me really happy that, you know, it's again, everybody, we all share some common interests, and it's kind of cool that Chikara kind of holds us all together. So
yeah, and it's interesting that, like, it's the one wrestling group that I think translates best to mix in with things like Upright Citizens Brigade and other forms of media.
Yeah, it's all inclusive, you know, and it's not, and I think it's partially by design, but it's also, you know, everybody that I've met, fans and wrestlers and everybody involved, we all kind of share, we're all kind of cut from the same cloth because of that too. And I really love that about this. So yeah, check out all those things that I just talked about on the internet. Just rewind this because it's on tape, and then, listen to that, or you can just follow me at Billy Kumo on Twitter, and because I will unabashedly plug any creative endeavor that I am involved with, or any, if I like you, I will RT the heck out of you. So yeah.
Follow at Chikara Special while you're at it too.
Follow him on the Tumblr. I like your Tumblr a lot.
Tumblr's been good for that kind of stuff. I find Tumblr's kind of underrated, I think.
It's the scrappy underdog of stuff to look at on the internet during the day.
I'll tell you what, it makes me not have to go on Reddit. That's a pretty strong thing about it.
You don't like the Reddit?
Not a fan. Not a fan of people on the Reddit.
It's I can get away with looking at stuff on Reddit at work, not so much on Tumblr, because it's like, hey, why are there 19 animated GIFs on your screen right now?
Oh, see, I think you're gonna say like, why is there just butts all over your screen right
what
now?
What are you looking at on? Oh, you're probably on.
I'm following Nick Manawa. I can't help it. Okay, he likes butts a lot.
Yeah, it's a speaking. Okay, sorry. One more tangent thing.
Sure.
Shout out to what's her? She's the Ultramentous Black on Tumblr.
Oh, Shadow Deathlock.
Yeah, that young lady deserves a round of applause because she's a super fan and I love the fact that whenever a new Ashes video comes out or Hatfields or anything,
it's so fast.
And it's great, you know. I love it, and you know everybody loves everybody involved with this project. Like they love, they're like, oh my gosh, this is a new GIF of me. I can use that as an avatar or something like that. So
and I love it because I can reblog it, and then it gets a lot of hits, and it's good.
We're using you for a clickbait, Shadow Deathlock.
Well, I'll tell you what. When Chikara goes black, and I need content to make that Tumblr still relevant, she was super helpful.
Yeah, she rules.
Yeah, she does rule. So, I do not mind you giving that shout out at all.
Yeah, shout out to all the fans in Jakarmi. Seriously, you guys, we love y'all. So, yeah.
All right, Billy. Well, thanks so much for coming on and doing this. I had a blast chatting about random stuff that I can safely say with no other guest can I do this. So,
yeah, grab me on too, Kevin. I've been wanting just we can't hang out a whole lot because you live far away. But yeah, man, like we're buddies, we're bros. You know. So glad I was able to sit and talk to you.
You might have to be just the first repeat guest on the show just to swap more stories because I'm sure there's plenty of them.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, man. Let's hang out soon.
We'll make it work. Thanks a lot, man.
Rambling. Thanks. Girls in cars.